Well, good morning, everyone. For those of you who I don't know, my name is Alexa, and I'm part of the community here at Emmaus Road with my family. We've been here for about 2 years now, and for those who don't know, our priest, Chad, he's on sabbatical right now, so I am obviously not him. And we have Father Mark with us, who's going to be presiding at the table, but we didn't want to put too much pressure on him, so we're kind of splitting up the preaching while he's here. So you're stuck with me today. It's really good to be with you this morning. So last week in the Gospel of Mark, we looked into Jesus's call to his first disciples, and Father Mark drew our attention back to the significance of the gospel that we're invited into. And as we enter into the next part of this chapter today, I want us to remember that we're in the liturgical season of Epiphany. This is the season of Christ's revelation and manifestation, a time where we're intended to reflect on how Jesus is being made known to us and who he's revealing himself to be. So Mark's gospel is actually a really great guide for us, since Mark has made his intentions very clear right from the beginning. In his opening line, he says, "This is the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah." And if you're familiar with the gospel of Mark at all, you know that he doesn't like to mess around, and he likes to kind of keep things moving towards this end. So I just want to point out that our passage today is about halfway through the first chapter of Mark. And at this point, he's already made a prophetic connection to Isaiah. He's talked about John the Baptist, recounted Jesus' baptism and testing in the wilderness, and described the call that Jesus made to his first disciples. So it's kind of as if Mark has said, like, here, we've laid the groundwork. This is what you need to know. Now let's get into who Jesus is and what he's actually doing here. So what we're exploring today is the story that Mark chooses to lead with as Jesus' first public ministry. And it represents a first piece of the mosaic that he intends to bring to life to express the true identity of Jesus and bring that into focus. As I was spending time in Mark to prepare for today, I kept being pulled back to this idea of a mosaic. The fast-moving, almost movie clip-esque nature of Mark feels like he's trying to give us just these little snippets again and again, and kind of hoping that at the end we'll be able to pull all those pieces together and get this full image of who Christ is. And we'll talk more in a little bit of why that might be Mark's strategy, but for now I hope that we can kind of take in this story as this first piece of Jesus' identity as it's in the process of being fully revealed. So let's get into it then. So starting in Mark chapter 1, verse 21. And John, should I move somewhere? I just feel like I'm hearing myself. No? Back a step? Okay. There. Maybe. Oh, that is better. Okay, great. Thank you. I was like, I don't know if it's bugging anyone else, but it's bugging me. So, all right. So, verse 21. So here Jesus was teaching in the synagogue, and it seems pretty clear for Mark that he was a big hit. We're told that those in attendance were amazed by his teaching because it had this authoritative nature to it. Now, the word used for authority in the Greek here kind of captures this idea of a sort of privileged influence. So it seems that those present to this teaching were perceiving some sort of grace or divine anointing upon Jesus and what he was saying. His words carried a different kind of weight than those who were typically teaching. And then amidst this time of teaching, a man with an unclean spirit, and to that I want you to just think unclean compared to clean, as in like ritually pure, so unpure or unholy spirit, it begins to speak out about Jesus. And as we can see in verse 24, he brings up some pretty interesting claims. Now, as a side note, I just laughed. As I was looking through commentaries on this passage this week, there was like a blog post I came across, and it was entitled, "You Never Know Who's Sitting Beside You at Church." And I kind of laughed. I was like, I see what you're getting at, but is that really like the big takeaway from this passage? So anyways, now that you're all secretly side-eyeing who's sitting beside you and wondering what's going to happen, I'm actually going to like fast forward in the story a little bit to the part where Jesus responds to what this spirit is saying by rebuking it and calling it out of the man. We're going to circle back to what I'm calling the duel that goes down between Jesus and the spirit, but for now I want us to focus on Jesus' act of actually removing the spirit. The act of calling out the spirit displayed another type of authority in this situation, as one who has a privileged influence within the spiritual realm as well. So it's clear from Mark's gospel that it's actually this combination of Jesus' words and this deed that really grasp people's attention. We don't know exactly what Jesus was teaching about, but you get the sense from verse 27 that those who were there were making a connection between the two, and that they were holding these things together within one larger overarching experience. So both were significant in their own right, but the shared overlapping context appears to have amplified the authority that was already present, and that's what really made people pay attention to what was going on here. It was the holding together of word and deed that exhibited this integrity of authority, which is the crucial component of Jesus' identity that's being shown to us here. It's like a little piece of the mosaic that I talked about that's being given and beginning to be built out for them. So we'll hit pause on this idea of the connection of word and deed for a moment and go back to the duel. And take a look, a little bit of a closer look of what actually happened between Jesus and this spirit. So there's actually quite a bit that happens in these few lines of scripture. And we'll kind of be focusing here on verses 23 to 26, if you're following along. And when I read these verses, I kind of envision this like movie moment. So at this point, everyone's mesmerized by Jesus's teaching. And then this guy just kind of breaks the atmosphere with these really bold statements. And now remember that at this time, Jesus is like a little more than a nobody to this community. People are hearing him teach in this manner that carries this new type of unfamiliar authority. And they're probably beginning to ask, who is this guy? And just as they're pondering about this, our dear friend with the unclean spirit decides to chime in and try and fill the gaps for any wondering minds. But he does so by making a couple kind of attempted blows at Jesus. So what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? He's from Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? This is the first blow. It's an attempt to kind of discredit Jesus' reputation and break down any sense of authority. Have you come to destroy us? Destroy us? We're just starting to kind of like this guy. Is this some manipulative trick where he's going to turn on us one day? This is the second blow, an attempt to get people to be scared of Jesus or not trust him. And then he makes this really bold statement, I know who you are. And I'm guessing people there are going, this guy knows who Jesus is? No one else really does. Are they associated with each other? This is the third blow, kind of making a potentially negative association to Jesus. And then he says, or then he calls Jesus and says that he is the Holy One of God. Holy One of God. Those aren't meaningless words in this context. And this is the fourth blow. He makes this majorly, like, socio-politically, religiously charged name drop, essentially. So you can imagine sitting there and you just took all this in, and all of a sudden you are really confused about what's happening here. And when I picture this, I envision the crowd trying to discern kind of who's the good guy and who's the bad guy in this scenario. They were starting to think Jesus was pretty legitimate, but now they're questioning. They might have thought something was a little off with this man before, but now they're wondering if he might actually have some sort of insight or special knowledge that's important information about this new guy on the block. So you can feel the unease in the room as they wait for Jesus to respond to this. So how does Jesus respond? He doesn't get into a debate or try and prove his case. He doesn't try and defend his honor or clarify his intentions. He responds with a twofold directive to this unclean spirit. Be silent and come out of him. Now, the funny thing is, a lot of what the unclean spirit expresses through this man is to some degree true. He is Jesus from Nazareth, come to destroy us. If the us is the unclean spirits that wreak havoc in people, then the answer is kind of yes, he has come to destroy them, but only because his overarching mission is to bring healing to the world. And then you are the Holy One of God. Yes, this is in fact also true. So his statements carry a degree of truth to them, but they're lacking some crucial enlightenment around them. So Jesus tells the spirit to be silent. Be silent. Stop using your words to twist, distract, and connive this situation. This directive appears to be more for the sake of Jesus' overarching mission, and it's also for the sake of those considering his message. It's like he's saying, stop breeding lies and muddling the living water that I just gave to these people. The second instructive to the spirit is for it to come out of him. Come out of him. Stop tormenting this man. Stop using him for your purposes. Let him be free. This directive appears to be more for the sake of the man, for his own healing in his own life. So we then read that the unclean spirit then comes out with a final burst, and or as I like to call it, a demonic temper tantrum, and the duel ends. Now, I'm wondering if you caught the continuation of this theme of word and deed, even in this little interaction. Again, what did Jesus say to the spirit? He said, be silent and come out of him. He addressed the spirit in both word and in action. He cuts off his unhelpful words and removes him from being able to act within this man anymore. So put simply, he told the spirit to stop using words and stop acting, and because these words and his deeds were not of his kingdom. So in this story, Jesus not only revealed himself through word and action, but he also showed that his ministry would address or bring healing and sanctification to both word and deed in the world. So there's a power that is present in both word and deed, particularly when they're enacted together. And that's one that can be used for both good and for evil, as we see throughout the story. So now, as I already kind of pointed out, there was some truth to what the Spirit was sharing. So why would Jesus tell him to be silent? Why not just correct him or give context to what the unclean spirit was saying? Well, one of the things that Mark really highlights about Jesus throughout his account of the gospel is that Jesus has this strong desire to reveal himself, his true self, in his own way and in his own time. We see this in his instruction to the unclean spirit to be silent, and this theme of sort of silencing or correcting or redirecting the use of his name and the identity attached to it runs all throughout Mark's gospel as well as the other gospel accounts as well. And I think this is because the concept of Messiah was so familiar to the Jewish community. And with that, there was a particular image associated with who this Messiah would be. A king who would bring freedom to the Jewish people, overthrow Rome, restore order. This whole image was so deeply formed within the Jewish imagination. You can imagine that when people or spirits began to kind of throw language around associated with this Messiah, that people could get really fixated on that. And as we see here at the very beginning of kind of Mark's telling of the gospel, Jesus is actually trying to paint a different image, maybe refine that image. And so he wants us to pay attention to who Jesus actually is revealing himself to be. So it's as if Jesus, through his words and deeds, is giving those who are paying attention just these little tiles of the mosaic that will eventually reveal his true image and who this Messiah really is. But if others began naming that picture beforehand, those holding the pieces might try and force them into that image and actually miss who it is that Jesus is truly revealing himself to be. So for Jesus' own purposes, he could have just told the spirit to be silent. That would have solved most of the problems that were coming up for him in this scenario. But by freeing the man from the spirit, he showed that he's not just kind of some expert brand manager, but someone who intends to actually do something in the world. It reaffirmed the authority that had already been sensed around his words. And in this piece of the mosaic, it's formed this picture of Jesus that becomes a little clearer and shows him as a man of integrity who carries a divinely anointed authority in teaching and in the spiritual realm, and as one whose intention is to use that authority to usher new realities into the world. So I think there's a few kind of practical takeaways for us in this story, especially as we consider what it means for how we are to be an extension of Jesus in the world around us. Let's remember what made this moment significant in Jesus' ministry. It was a moment of both gospel words and gospel action. In our home group last week, we were kind of talking about this dynamic and wrestling through how we actually enact this in our daily lives. But what stuck out to me in spending time in this passage this week is that both were present in the same moment. I think it can be so easy for us to kind of say, you know, like I did my deeds over here, or, you know, I shared a good word here, but all these moments of power, there's always this theme of word and action being fully present and working together in a particular moment. And in here, we see that people were amazed by Jesus' teaching and his words, and they were amazed by the act of casting out the unclean spirit. But what really moved them was the sense of authority that connected those two things. The connection or embodiment of both in an instant is what left them in wonder. And it showed Jesus was not simply a wise teacher or a spiritual magician, but one who seemed to transcend both these realms and actually be able to bring them together and bring meaning and healing and impact the world. So as I mentioned earlier, this story kind of helps launch Mark's gospel, which carries this theme of reorienting the truth of who the Messiah is. And it got me thinking about how this reorientation is actually really relevant to our current cultural moment. If asked, do you know who Jesus is? I feel like a lot of people in society would still probably answer yes and be able to give like a quick little synopsis. But I think we can agree that many people might be able to give a few words of association with Jesus, but far fewer have a true grasp of who he really is and what he actually means to the world. Others may feel they have a very strong understanding of who Jesus is, but perhaps that understanding is actually quite distorted. So in a world that has a lot of expectations and beliefs about who Jesus is, how do we share the truth of who he really is? How do we share the tiles of a mosaic that displays the real person of Jesus, the Holy One of God? From this passage, I think that we see it will require both word and deed in this bonded, infused relationship. Gospel words, gospel deeds, in their own separate moments, but intentionally fused together within kind of these divinely appointed moments. Another concept I hope that we'll see more of as we kind of journey through Mark in the coming weeks is the presence of word and deed in so many little moments. Yes, the gospel has all these kind of wow moments, but even many of those wow moments were actually very simple. They were just Jesus responding simply to what was in front of him. And so I hope that gives us a bit of an encouragement that we don't have to try and fabricate or, you know, sit down and strategically plan when we're going to have these moments of word and deed and, you know, expect this big impact. But I think so much more of it is being led by the Spirit in these moments and a willingness to be attuned and attentive to that. That's the means by which Christ revealed himself to the world and continues to reveal himself to the world today. One of the honors of being a disciple of Jesus is that we actually get to participate in this ongoing revelation. So as we wrestle with how to actually do this, my hope in the coming weeks is that as we journey through this season of Epiphany, we will re-encounter Jesus's revelation to us afresh. And that we'll be reminded that there is an authority and a privileged influence that he carried and then extended to us through the Holy Spirit. And that we that would kind of rekindle in our lives an ability to kind of be a clarifying witness to the person of Jesus and the goodness of his gospel to a world that really is desperate for it and maybe unknowingly hungry to receive it as well. So as we kind of transition our time to the table today, I just ask God, would you prompt us the use of and sanctify the outpouring of our words and our deeds? Would you lead us in humility in this ongoing revelation to the world? And would you help us share the true image of who you are through us? And it would it be for your namesake, Lord, for your honor and for your glory.